welcome to Wednesday's Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein. First, a quick note to those of you who pledged your support to Prairie Public during our recent fund drive. We are grateful. Thank you so very much. Your support is needed now more than ever. Coming up in the second half of today's show, a supplemental way K-12 students are learning here in North Dakota. But it's Wednesday. That means it's time for Prairie Plates.
I like bagels.
And as I just mentioned, it's Prairie Plates time with our great friend Rick Guion. Rick, welcome back to Main Street.
Thanks, Craig. It's good to be back with you.
It is great to be with you. And we are joined by a special guest, Chris Tello, from Huckleberry House in Bismarck. It's located right where the Lewis and Clark riverboat launches are, and it's making waves, so to speak. Chris, tell me about Huckleberry House. If I've never been there before, and I haven't, but I want to go, what am I going to see when I walk in the doors?
Yeah, so we are a kind of a Nordic German heritage-focused restaurant from a culinary perspective. I always characterize it as it is very much a kind of chef-driven kitchen. So what I mean by that is people will come in and they'll see a lot of things on the menu that maybe they are familiar with, like their grandmother maybe had made or their grandfather maybe had made, you know, your Fleischkekle and your Lefse and your Kuchen and things like that. But being chef driven, it's maybe done in a bit more unique way or maybe elevated. And so we do this all inside of a kind of an 1800s inspired kind of boathouse that you maybe would have found down by the Missouri River back, you know, in Lewis and Clark days or kind of when Bismarck was kind of developing, if you will. And we have a large patio as well that gets utilized come the spring and summer months. And you can enjoy the Missouri River. And you know, it's one of the newer kind of developed spaces down by the Missouri River. Some people may be familiar with the old restaurant that was in the exact site, which was Captain Merriweather's that flooded in the 2001. So it's a little bit dissimilar to that spot in that, you know, the entire inside is glass. So you can see, you know, regardless of if you're sitting outside or inside, you can see the Missouri River. And it's kind of situated so that both from the inside and outside perspective, you're looking right upriver. So you can, you know, see, you know, must be a mile upstream. And then we're located right north of the I-94 bridge. So you can see downstream as well. Smack dab right next to the river.
I was going to ask, Chris, is the riverboat in yet?
It is. It gets put in a Memorial Day weekend. So they'll be coming in with a large crane and it's kind of a production. And a lot of people come down from Bismarck to kind of watch it kind of get set in because it's a kind of a feat, if you will. You know, they put the dock in and then they set the large riverboat in, you know, come Memorial Day weekend. So, I mean, it's a really nice neighbor to have right next to us. You know, people can come down and, you know, they'll go on the riverboat, whether it's an afternoon or an evening kind of you know, ride, and then they can come for drinks or dinner before or after. It's a nice evening.
Let's maybe get to the food portion a little bit. You talked about the emphasis on chefs and kitchen and that sort of thing. Talk a little bit about what this James Beard semi-finalist nomination for your head chef Cody Monson means to the restaurant.
You know, anytime you're recognized from a national perspective, it's always really great. And I think that North Dakota in general is starting to kind of get a little bit of notoriety. You know, I think that in the Midwest, I think that sometimes, you know, maybe prior to several years ago, you know, all of the acclaim was maybe left to larger cities, you know, Minneapolis, Chicago, etc. But I think that maybe some of the kind of judges and whatnot are kind of branching out into realize that there are some really great communities that are maybe smaller that don't have as many tourists and such, but that have great food coming from it, you know, and in Bismarck, we're really proud to be a part of that kind of culinary community, right? So from a food perspective, we're really excited about like what we have going on. You know, it's what we like to think of it as almost like, you know, heritage comfort food, if you will, you know, like, you know, the South has their type of comfort food. And then, you know, ours is very much influenced by the German and kind of Nordic heritage of the Bismarck Mandan community and kind of that comfort food that encapsulates our community.
Are there some favorite things on the menu of yours?
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, for me, the Hasselhoffs are super, you know, kind of quintessential, almost like comfort food, whether it's kind of lunch or evening. Think of almost like a elevated, for lack of a word, like better word, like tater tot hot dish, right? So we've got tots and this pressure cooked pork, you know, with the tanginess of sauerkraut, with a beer and butter case kind of cheese sauce and chives on there. You know, I never was growing up like super big into sauerkraut, but now as an adult, like it's super great to have in dishes. And so that's one that is definitely one of our best sellers, and people love eating it for lunch, or they come in and have it as like a shared appetizer, and people are always talking about how great it is. From more of like an entree perspective, my go-to is always the schnitzel, right? So people, I think, kind of have a perception of kind of what a German schnitzel is. And so we do it a little bit different with house-made charcoal spätzle, which is almost like a thin kind of dumpling, almost like a dough type. And it's cooked off with charred cabbage and some whipped butter case and a really great house-made fresh dill and hemp heart sauce. And so it kind of has that, you get that chicken schnitzel with the cheese and the charred cabbage. It's super, super comforting, I would say.
I've had quite a few things on the menu, but I have not had those two. So those are a few things I need to try. And coming from the general manager of the restaurant, I think I better try those.
For sure.
Chris, you talk about comfort food. It sounds to me like you also have comfort drinks. Your craft cocktail list is sure getting some attention. Are there a couple drinks that really capture the spirit of Huckleberry House that I need to try?
Yeah. So as far as a drink perspective, you know, we do have our kind of namesake on there, you know, the Huckleberry Cooler, which, you know, we incorporate kind of like a huckleberry shrub into the drink. And then we actually keg that drink. We have a few of them that we actually keg and have on draft that we make them all in-house. A lot of the, whether it's the shrubs or the simple syrups or, you know, some of the other kind of ingredients we make in-house. So, for example, like I said, the huckleberry shrub, you know, we utilize pea flour to make some simple syrups as well. But yeah, that Huckleberry Cooler is for sure our bestseller, and obviously it also is our namesake.
One thing I like about the cocktail menu is that there are mocktails and quite a few of them. Could you talk a little bit about the mocktail options? It seems like a trend right now for people that just aren't drinking or give it up for Lent or have a dry January, something like that.
Yeah, so we definitely, you know, like you had touched on, it's kind of a trend over the last couple of years that a lot of people are either, you know, being, whether they're sober or maybe someone is pregnant, or maybe they still want to have a celebratory type of affair with their family or friends, but just maybe they don't want to be drinking. So we would definitely wanted to lean into that. And there are a lot of really great companies out there that are producing NA spirits. So they kind of mimic the flavor profiles of your typical spirits like gin and tequila and vodka. And so it kind of mimics some of the flavor profiles, but they are NA. And then we incorporate them. So they're built exactly like a cocktail would be made, you know, whether it's being shaken or stirred or any of the kind of normal kind of processes that go about when you're making a cocktail, but they just incorporate NA spirits. But, you know, we utilize the same sort of simple syrups and shrubs that we would do with a standard cocktail. It's just made with an NA spirit. And it's really nice because, you know, we just went through prom season and a lot of those, you know, a lot of those kids came in and they would order a mocktail and kind of take some fun celebratory pictures. You know, their parents would take some fun pictures with them, and it was nice for them. You know, they're kind of cheersing and having a nice kind of nice evening before going to prom, and we're able to kind of have a fun drink for them versus, like, you know, kind of the standard, you know, Shirley Temple or something like that.
That is really unique.
We're enjoying our conversation with Chris Tello from Huckleberry House in Bismarck. Awesome menu, awesome drinks. Chris, let us know how things are going with the restaurant relative to staffing. It's sure an issue here in Fargo with some restaurants. Are you able to staff as you would like? And do you have any other challenges that you're kind of meeting head on?
Yeah. So as far from a staffing perspective, you know, luckily for us, I think that we have a really solid solid core group of team, both from in our front of house and back of house. And I think that we have a pretty, you know, we staff up because we are kind of a seasonal sort of establishment from a, you know, when we open up the patio, our seats kind of grow by about, you know, we kind of triple in size, if you will. So we do have a really nice, you know, summer staff that kind of comes in, whether they're college students coming back from college or, you know, some students from University of Mary. So we don't really have too big of an issue from that perspective. The biggest kind of issue that kind of comes alongside that is, you know, the seasonality of the establishment, right? So we, you know, we decrease in size in the winter and then we increase in size in the summer. So there is that kind of anomaly that we need to kind of work with, you know, whether, you know, staffing up, you know, the change in you know, business, I guess, the scaling mm-hmm. up of a business within the summer months, but then scaling down in the winter. And then last summer, we did have a little bit of a problem. There was a big construction project that took place on the I-94 bridge, and it did kind of the DOT closed a big chunk of our parking lot. So that was a little bit of a struggle last summer, but there's no construction currently going on in our immediate proximity. So it shouldn't be an issue this summer.
That is good news.
That is good news. And my next question was about tourist season. And in the summertime, a lot of people drive through Bismarck. I think Huckleberry House is one of those places to stop at. I've definitely done that a few times. It's just a unique spot. What are your summer hours going to be like?
Yeah, so right now we are open for lunch on Wednesday through Friday from 11 until 2. We have brunch on Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. And then we have an evening service Wednesday through Saturday starting at 4 p.m. And then our kitchen closes at 9 p.m., but then we're open until 11 p.m., you know, for drinks or kind of wanting to continue enjoying the sunset, if you will, from 9 p.m. on.
And I'm looking at the brunch menu. Can you describe that a little bit, or maybe describe a few of your favorites on that brunch menu?
Yeah. So, you know, the brunch menu is kind of a mix of have a couple things that are on our lunch menu that, you know, the white buffalo, for example, the, you know, kind of a burger with some meat roasted onions and blue cheese and white, our really famous white barbecue sauce. But we have some other staples that are pretty, you know, maybe familiar, but we do them a little bit different, like our chicken and waffles. You'll find that on a lot of different menus. But we do a breakfast version of those Hasselhoffs that, you know, we have on our lunch menu, on our dinner menu. But then when we put it onto our kind of brunch menu, we have the same sort of really great tater tots, pork, and sauerkraut, but then we incorporate two over easy eggs that kind of adds the richness of the yolk in there, which is really, really fun.
Well, brunch is just a popular thing right now, so I think that's really a smart addition that you've added here. And it's just a fun spot to have lunch when it's nice, or brunch when it's nice outside, or all of it, dinner too, cocktails, because the patio is so large. It's just a beautiful venue. Can you talk about the space a little bit that you're in?
Yeah, so I mentioned the kind of almost floor-to-ceiling windows that are on the inside of the space. And then the deck space outside, you know, we kind of went with, you know, when Aaron Barth, who's the executive director of the Fort Abraham Lincoln Foundation and Northern Plains Heritage Foundation, you know, when the building was being constructed, you know, lucky for us that we were, you know, involved in a way in kind of what the interior and the exterior kind of looked like. I think they had like a plan going in as far as kind of the wooden nature of the building itself. But we kind of emphasized some of that Scandinavian kind of minimalist kind of going into when it was kind of being built out. So you find like the shiplap on the walls. You know, we really love incorporating a lot of the, you know, with the windows, incorporating a lot of plants on the inside, which they get such great sunlight. And they really pop against kind of the white shiplap walls. You know, the bar has a really nice warm tone on the top and incorporates some nice kind of heritage coins into the bar top, which is kind of fun. And then, yeah, and then the outside, we could to kind of do the same type of thing. We can, you know, come maybe Mother's Day onwards, we'll end up putting a lot of plants out on the, and flowers out on the deck, you know, kind of imagine like a really much larger version of maybe a duck deck that people have in their backyard, but you know, with the river in the background. So it's really nice.
It does really have like a Scandinavian look to it. There's Danish glassware. I mean, just for people that aren't in the Bismarck area and are interested in checking out Huckleberry House, it's just, to me, it's just a really unique space.
Yeah, you know, and then also we don't really have it on in the summer, but we have one of the very kind of Scandinavian influence kind of fireplaces in the corner, kind of with again the windows behind it and some nice cozy modern clean chairs. And you know, for people that, you know, maybe you're not necessarily going to come in for dinner, or maybe you finish dinner and you want to continue socializing, you can kind of sit by the fireplace that's inside and continue your conversations or continue your cocktail, you know, while the sun goes down.
And if you want to have an event at Huckleberry House, how would you do that?
Yeah, so we have a form on our website, and we do a lot of different that you can kind of put all of your information and kind of submit an inquiry. And we host tons of different types of events, ranging from, you know, we've hosted weddings before. We do a lot of kind of corporate type of kind of dinners or board meetings to, you know, this, you know, with the legislature church is kind of closing. We've hosted several events for different kind of legislative type of events as well. So ranging from, you know, sit down dinners, you know, court a little bit more formal course dinners to more of like cocktail parties, right? You wanted to do like a celebratory type of event, like a retirement party or a graduation open house, that type of thing. So we kind of, you know, have lots of different types of events that we host.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah. Chris Tello has been our guest. He's from Huckleberry House in Bismarck, a wonderful restaurant that has a great view of the Missouri River. Thanks so much for joining us on Prairie Plates, Chris.
Hey, thank you very much for having me.
And it's always great, Rick, to have you with us. Thanks for coming again.
We'll talk to you next week, Craig.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein. Like a classic John Hughes movie, this story from Fargo's monthly live storytelling event, The Tell, reminds us of a timeless Gen X lesson. You can't always judge a book by its cover, as Bo Diddley sang. Enjoy Becky Blankish's tale, No, I Wasn't a Groupie, and in true 80s spirit, let's borrow a line from The Princess Bride to set the tone.
Inconceivable!
I'm really glad I can't see anybody up here. All right, so this is another story that took place when I lived in Brooklyn. And I moved out to Brooklyn, to New York from Fargo. I grew up here in Fargo. And I moved to New York City ostensibly to go to college. But really, the reason I moved out there was because that's where I could go to see all the bands. So while I was attending NYU, really what I was doing is going to class on the first day to get the syllabus, buy the books, and then go on the road to see all the bands that I liked. And I would show up for midterms, turn in term papers, show up for finals, and other than that, my friends and I were on the road following bands around. But no, I was not a groupie. We did not have sex with anybody, unfortunately. I did date a few band members, but I'm not going to tell you who they were. Mostly what we liked were bands who were from overseas. You know, they were English, Scottish, Welsh, you know, UK type bands, a few from Germany. They were post-punk, new wave bands, goth bands. We kind of, I guess, would have fallen into that goth category ourselves. And there was a group of us, I'd say like 10 or 15 of us, who traveled a lot together. And the main characters in this particular story I'm going to share with you, there were four of us. And I'm going to change the names to protect the innocent, or the not so innocent. So there was myself, my roommate, and a brother and a sister, who I'll just call the goth guy, and his little sister. Have any of you ever heard of The Cure? Okay. So what we used to do basically is any band from England basically travels up and down the whole East Coast. And we would go on the tour up and down the whole East Coast with them. So we were going to do that with The Cure when the album The Head on the Door came out. So this was, I think it was 85 or 86. And the four of us were going to mainly do this tour together. So I guess I was 19 or 20. So I was just starting college then. And my roommate was like a year older than me. And the goth guy, he was about the same age as me, but his little sister was 16. So we were goths. My roommate had blonde hair. I had orange hair. The color was called brandied apricot. I mean, it was like really, really orange. The goth guy was over 6 feet tall, and he was really, really big. And this was before he did up his hair. So he was like monstrously huge when he had his hair done. And his little sister, she had really long hair. She did, you know, and then she spiked it up on the top. And we all dressed really goth. But she had a pink Care Bears backpack that she wore all the time, you know, because she was 16. And that was a thing then. So when I lived in Fargo, my family never had a car. So I knew nothing about cars. I didn't have a license or anything. My roommate didn't have a license, I don't think, at that point. So we were going to follow The Cure in Richard's mother's car. And we took the PATH train to New Jersey, and we got in Richard's car. We had seen The Cure the night before. I think they played at the Beacon in New York City, which is kind of a mid-size theater. You know, they were big, but they weren't huge at that point. And we were going to go see them in Trenton, New Jersey, at a place called the City Gardens. So we get in Richard's car, and us being girls, you know, we're all dressed up and stuff. We used to, like, go to hotel rooms. You know, we'd rent a hotel room in the town where we were going to stay, and there'd be like 10 or 15 of us crammed into these hotel rooms. And we'd be like a troop of gorillas before the show, because we'd all be like grooming each other, you know, like, you know, putting on makeup and spiking up hair. You know, we used Aquanet. You have to have Aquanet. It's like the only thing that makes that goth hair stand up, you know. And we'd be teasing hair and putting on makeup and, you know, helping each other with jewelry and stuff. So since we left from Richard's, we kind of did all that stuff at Richard's house. Oops, I just gave his name away. I didn't realize that. This is the goth guy. His name was Richard, okay. So we left from his house, and we get on the New Jersey Turnpike to go to the show. We get a little ways, and the car breaks down. We get a flat tire, and none of us knows what to do. Because we're young, none of us has any experience with how to change a tire. We're all dressed up in our goth gear, and we get out, and we're just kind of standing there looking at the tire. And he's looking at the tire, and he gets the jack, and he's trying to put it underneath the car to figure out how to do it. And we're being all helpful, going like, lefty loosey, righty tighty, and, you know, pointing at stuff. And he finally manages, with our invaluable help, to get the spare tire out of the trunk and put it on the car. And the spare is flat. So people are going by us at 90 miles an hour down the turnpike, and they're not going to stop because we're goths, and they're scared of us. And this is before cell phones. So we're kind of like, oh, we're screwed. You know, they don't have, like every 10 miles or something, they have emergency phones on the side of the highway. And we're not dressed to walk. You know, have stiletto heels on and mini skirts and fishnet hose. So we're just like, what are we going to do? And this bus goes by us, and it pulls up about 100 feet in front of us and stops, and it puts its flashers on. And we think it's going to be one of these buses that takes all the gray-haired old ladies down to Atlantic City to go to spend their Social Security checks on the slot machines, you know. And we're like, at this point, we don't care. You know, we'll get on the bus and go to Atlantic City. We just don't want to be standing by the side of the highway anymore. So we walk kind of up to meet the bus, and the door opens and the Cure get off the bus. So talk about inconceivable, right? You know, what are the chances of this happening? And it's the Cure's tour bus. And Robert Smith comes over and he's like, yeah, we saw you and we knew just by looking at you, you had to be our fans, you know? can't leave our fans standing by the side of the road. So they like took us onto the bus and they took us to the venue with them. They gave us sticky passes. They put us in front of the barrier to watch the show. We actually had booked the same hotel that they had booked that night. So we got to hang around with them at the hotel that night. They signed all of the stuff that we had brought with. I have an autographed copy of The Head on the Door in a frame at my house. The next morning, their manager made sure that we had a way to get back to the car and have some way to get it fixed. So everything that you've heard about Robert Smith being nice is true. I can vouch for that. And three things I have to say is, number one, goths are not as scary as you think they are just because they look that way. Number two, Aquanet definitely caused the hole in the ozone layer. And number three, always check your spare tire before you go traveling.
The Cure takes us out of Becky Blankish's story, No, I Wasn't a Groupie, a tale of both girls, Aquanet's atmospheric hazards, and that classic North Dakota dad advice, make sure you inflate your spare. Catch The Tell's next show tomorrow night, Thursday, at 7 o'clock at 4x4 above Side Street Grill and Pub in downtown Fargo. Details are on The Tell's Facebook page. Still to come on Main Street, a supplemental way K-12 students are learning in North Dakota. That's after this. Main Street continues. I'm Craig Blumenschein. We're talking more than math drills and flashcards. We're diving into how one educational organization is helping reshape learning in North Dakota, and not just for students, but for communities they call home. Carrie Weigel is co-owner of Sylvan Learning Centers in Fargo and Bismarck. Carrie, welcome to Main Street.
Thank you, Craig. Good morning.
Carrie, I was surprised as I began to do research about what Sylvan is. And I want to point out for our listeners, it is a for-profit organization. Nationally, it operates a franchise network of supplemental education centers, providing personalized tutoring services in subjects like reading, mathematics, writing, study skills, and homework support, and test preparation, primarily for K-12 students. But they are also a partner of the public education system here in North Dakota. And that's where I want to start. Carrie, if I could first describe what Sylvan Learning Center is, and then let's get into how you are utilized, your services are utilized by public schools.
Well, thank you, Craig. Yes. So we have been in the state of North Dakota for 30 years. We started our business in 1995. My mom was an educator and she was in the public system and she realized she was having a hard time meeting and reaching every student. So that's where we began in North Dakota. Through the years, of course, we help private families as they need help, but we've also partnered since early 2000s with the public school system and private school system. Oftentimes, we're providing extra help and support with their reading and math, as you indicated before, and through different partnerships and different type of funding. Sometimes we've even, like this last year, worked with students in getting them ready for the ACT exam, which is that college prep test.
So if you were to describe to me what a relationship is with a parent who has a child with Sylvan, how would you describe that relationship?
As a partner with that parent, oftentimes that relationship starts with a parent calling us and having some indication that maybe things aren't where they want them. Maybe there's some frustration happening.
In school, you're talking about.
Yes, in school. Excuse me. Yes, in school. So maybe there's frustration doing homework at night, or they have a specific goal. We do help kids who, you know, just like you go to hockey practice to learn how to play hockey. Some students want to read or write or become a journalist. And so they would want to come and strengthen their skills. So that relationship starts with the parent checking us out and going from there.
I understand in COVID, it was an interesting time for you in a somewhat oddly positive way. You helped out some public schools in the state.
Absolutely. Public schools and families. I mean, that was a crazy time for all of us. Our schools were shut down, just like we remember, in a matter of a day. They were having to try to get in and log in and get all these kids online. And so we did partner with several schools across the state to kind of provide some extra services as they were getting their teams ready for this. So we took over and helped with some reading and math support for a few schools. And again, those parents who were at home and they needed to get to their jobs. Maybe they were doctors or nurses or people who really needed to be at work. And we were able to help with those students too.
Someone learns of your services. They wonder whether it's right for them. You develop a plan, but then you also then charge the families. How do you work through that fiscal part of the relationship? And what if people need your help and maybe can't afford it?
Well, that's a great question. So, well, let's start with the top one. So usually when people call us and they're looking for support, you know, we do have a fee for what we do. And we have different payment plans and everything, as much as it's personalized for the student, it's personalized for the family for payment. So all different ways. And our traditional rate, we charge usually like on an hourly basis. And those range usually between $55 and $65 a session. Now, with that being said, there are some families and students who that is not something they can afford. And through the years, it always changes, Craig. Like there are sometimes grants available. There are certain partnerships with other places that they are involved in. For instance, the Mandan Hidatsa Arikara tribe has a great program where the students can get some tutoring support.
Students who live in Bowman or Wishick or Minot or Williston, how can they take advantage?
We are currently helping students from each of those places right now. Oftentimes what that looks like is we meet with families online just like this. So we have a live teacher and we have a personalized program, and we get to meet over Zoom or some other type of, you know, product like that. And we can teach those kids. So it works all over the state.
So we've heard often about a teacher shortage in North Dakota and quite frankly, across the country. How do you recruit folks who work for you, Carrie? And how do you know that they're good at what they do?
Yes, this is very important. You know, we all do a good job, but our teachers are critical. Those teachers that come in. And so how do we know they do a good job? We of course, we interview these teachers. We look at their credentials. They're licensed through the state.
Must they be licensed to work for you?
In most every area they do. And then they go through our own Sylvan certification as well. So they go through a training program and get Sylvan certified as well. And so there are some exceptions to a teacher's license. For instance, higher level math. Sometimes we have some people who have, you know, engineers that are, you know, able to come in and go through our certification and pass all of our background checks, which we do need to do. So all of our teachers have to go through the same type of background checks as they would to be working in the school.
Do you have teachers that teach by day in their public or private school and by evening or weekend with you?
Most of our teachers do exactly that. Yes, that they're in the school. And then, yes, in the afternoon and evening, they'll come to us. And so some of our teachers are on the retired end, like they've retired. They don't want to have that classroom anymore. Others might be a sub, like they're subbing in the schools and then they want to do a little extra. And then we have those that run their own classroom. And oftentimes they will say this is what they come and they get their energy, that they get to come to Sylvan and just teach. You know, when they're in the school, they're doing a lot of different things, our teachers are, during the day. But when they come to Sylvan, they just get to connect and teach the kids. And so they really, really love that part of it.
So we've talked about how you kind of evaluate teachers. How do you know students are learning at an important pace and not kind of staying flat or maybe not improving with your system?
Absolutely. Well, this is critical. I mean, I don't think we'd be in the business for 30 years if we weren't making gains for students. And I will tell you that that's really important. So as you remember, I mentioned that initial assessment that we do with the students. For many of our programs, we'll do some progress assessments along the way. So after, you know, 30 to 40 sessions, we are doing progress assessments. And oftentimes, within about 40 sessions, we're seeing about a year's growth in skills. So imagine a student is in school for 175 days a year, and they're usually working about an hour a day in each subject. And it takes them about 170 days and hours to pass, you know, a third grade reading level. But at Sylvan, when we can really just target what that kiddo needs, we can get through and get them up to speed in much, much less time. And so we fill those gaps in quickly. So that gives you an idea. So we're always doing these progress assessments. We're looking to see when they master skills and recording that data and reporting that to the parents. And some of our programs like homework support, I guess the proof is in the pudding. I mean, the kids are usually their grades are going up in school. They're having a lot more success. Homework time is a lot easier at home. So some of the other programs we measure in other ways than just data.
We're enjoying our conversation with Carrie Weigel. She's co-owner of Sylvan Learning Centers in Fargo and Bismarck. Do homeschool families use your services? And if so, how?
Yes, they do. Just like any other student, sometimes they're wanting to come and get caught up or get ahead in some area. Sometimes mom or dad or whoever's at home teaching them, maybe they're really strong in several areas, but they're not strong in math. So then they'll bring their student for us for math. They've also used us because of our assessment. We go through Renaissance Learning. That's who does our assessment. So sometimes they're just coming in annually to make sure, and they're using us as their kind of check-in point so that they can not only show the state, but also make sure that they're making gains in their education.
Nationally, Carrie, and I want to talk to you about this. There have been some reviews that I've read that have raised concerns about the cost and consistency of tutoring services. We've kind of touched about that. How important, or how do you address those concerns when they come your way? And how do you know that what you're giving is of value? In other words, it's worth it.
It is probably critical to what we're doing. And we believe in a huge return on investment in our center. So how do we make sure that we are doing quality work? Kind of some of the things we talked about. First off and foremost, we want to make sure that we're hiring the right people, that we're making sure that they're certified, that they have the skills needed. We do check-ins with our teachers, not only once they're hired and trained and have their certifications, we're continually doing audits. These are mini coaching sessions to be sure that we're keeping up with the standards. Anytime there are updates in our state or federal standards or even Sylvan, those are updated immediately. The other way we control quality is making sure we're recording data on these kids and making sure that we're getting gains. We do monthly on a private level with families, we do monthly ongoing conferences. So we're constantly having these conversations. If a family isn't happy or we're not getting where we need to be, which rarely happens, but in the case that might be, they can leave us at any time. You know, this is a mutual decision to be there. And so they can exit services if they would like. With our contracts and our schools, there's a lot of data we need to provide. You know, the schools need to make sure that if they're partnering with a facility, that they're getting their needs. And you know what? From early 2000s, we've been working with our schools years and years ago. It was called No Child Left Behind. I don't know if you remember that. And now through the time, now it's SES services, which is Supplemental Education Services, that there's some legislation going through to help get kids to the level they need. So we've worked through programs since the early 2000s and that with schools. And again, having to submit a ton of data where they start and where they end.
So there are public school curriculums. There are parochial school curriculums. There are classic education curriculums. Do you teach everyone the same? Or again, do you take all of those desires from your initial meetings and kind of tailor the education relative to whether that person wants a classical education, whether they want a parochial education or a public school education?
Yeah, oftentimes what we do in that situation, Craig, is that when we're working with the student, oftentimes the parent will sign a release, so we get to coordinate with the teacher. And some teachers and some curriculums and some schools have a very particular way. And so as long as we have the skills and the resources needed, we will be able to do that, right? And we have all of our curriculum has been mapped to our state standards. So if we are hitting like what's in our third grade curriculum and getting through all the mastered skills that we require to get through, we're going to hit all state standards. So for most part, and parochial is oftentimes real in line with that. And when there are differences, we're talking usually with the teachers and making sure that we're hitting that. And oftentimes, not only is this a partnership with the parents, but if they sign a release, we're partnering again with the teacher. And we're making sure that, you know, our goal is to get that kid to their goal or beyond in as little time as possible. So we all work together.
I'm guessing that technology has changed the way you deliver services since you've been involved, Carrie. Walk us through what's new and what's coming.
You know what? This is, you know, back when I first started, it used to take us a lot longer to get through a grade level worth of skills because we did everything by hand. We would do these prescriptions. So if you would bring your child in, Craig, we would assess them and then we'd have to handwrite their prescriptions based on what we need. And as they were mastering those, we'd have to look in our big binder and find out, okay, after they have this skill, what to do, what to do. And now we have an adaptive learning platform. So our teachers are still teaching live, but all of our stuff is through we use an iPad and an app. So once we've got the kids' assessment and they're knowing our next things where we used to have to look them up in a binder are being served up right away. So if a kid is struggling with unlike denominators and they need a prerequisite skill, I can now push a button and the prerequisite skill comes right to me and I don't have to like go and look for the book on the shelf and open the thing. So we are getting through things a lot quicker and thank goodness for technology. Also, it's been able to help us help schools that are not in our backyard and also students like you just said in Bowman and Williston and Dickinson and all over the state. We are able to help students very easily thanks to technology.
Carrie, if a parent is listening and they're wondering, well, can my child benefit from this? I just don't know enough from this conversation, but I want to learn more. How can they figure it out before they commit?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. You can go out and read our Google reviews and you can hear from parents. And I always encourage people to do that. Really get out and look at our two centers, Fargo and Bismarck, and look to see. I think we have over 600 Google reviews between the two centers. The next thing I would do is give us a call, visit with myself or one of my directors. And at the end of the day, we're about helping kids where they need to be helped. And maybe we're not the right option. But we have been doing what we've been doing for 30 years. It started with my mom in 1995, and then I took over in the early 2000s. And I will tell you this, if we can't help, we might know somebody who can. And so oftentimes it's about just calling and inquiring and sharing your story and sharing your goals. And usually that will lead to that assessment that we talked about. And even after that assessment, sometimes, Craig, there's a better option out there for a student, depending on what they're looking for. And that's okay. I mean, we're here to partner with the family to get the kid what they need is the best. And I'm a mom too. You know, we really want kids to be successful. So I would say just call and have a conversation.
Last thing I want to talk to you about is, and you, I think you touched on it briefly earlier, but okay, here's my sophomore or junior. He or she is going to take the ACT or the SAT. How do you help? And how do you know that what you assist with works relative to those standardized tests?
Absolutely. So the very first thing, regardless if you're coming to Sylvan or wanting to prepare or anything, my number one recommendation is to take a test or a practice ACT or SAT. And I would say the full length. There's a lot of these shortened ones out there where you can get kind of like a snippet of it. But I don't think it prepares kids with the tenacity. I mean, these are long tests. And even though they can take a snippet and do well and they can get a predictive score, I think it's kind of, it sways them higher because some part of taking that test is staying focused for 4 hours, you know? And so anyone who is that age, sophomore and above, go ahead, find a practice test. We have them ourselves. We're happy to give them. So definitely you can call us and for free or a very nominal amount, depending on where we're at and what we're doing, we give those assessments for kids so that they can get a baseline. Once they have a baseline, then I think we get to say, what is your goal? I mean, if a student wants to get a 24 for whatever reason on the ACT because there's a state scholarship available at a 24 and they take the practice test and they got a 24, we might say, hey, you're good to go. I mean, you're probably not, there's probably not much to do. That's it. We have some kids who will come in and they'll get a score, but maybe they'll want 9 or 10 points. Like they'll want a, I want a 32, but they're scoring a 22. Well, I'll tell you what, Craig, sometimes then we just have to have that conversation. I don't want to say it's impossible, but that we just really want them to understand what that would look like and, you know, and whatnot. But we have several different ways to prepare for the ACT. We have little boot camps that are like a half a day type of boot camp. We have some online ones where kids are self-paced and it's still personalized to them and what they need. And then we have ones where they come over 6-7 weeks where they're coming to us twice a week. For 6-7 weeks for a couple hours an evening, and we're in a class. So we're going through a 500-page workbook and we're working together and we're really preparing. And oftentimes, I mean, that's a lot of work and those kids come. Oftentimes seeing anywhere from a 2 to 5 point gain is kind of what they're getting. We've had as low as 0 point gain and we've had as high as 9. But that's kind of our wide range. But again, it depends on the kids and what they want to do. But oftentimes it's, you know, just to jump into a, like kids will go out and buy a book or they'll go to a class, but they don't know where they started. So if they do that and they take this book or this class and then they go and take a test and they get a score and they're disappointed, they'll say, oh, studying didn't work. But they don't even know where they began. So recommendation, go get a practice test. Really look at it. Look at the schools that you want to go to. Look at what your goal is. And then let's have a conversation and pick what's best for you. And the next thing would be is these tests are offered like 6-7 times a year. I would say let's be real smart about when we take these tests. So if you're a wrestler and you're wrestling in the early spring of the year and there's a March test and that's kind of when your state tournament is, that's not the test you should be taking. You should maybe take the June or July test, you know? So we want kids to make sure that they're preparing for the right test. You can find us online and you can call our centers 701-223-0010 and we'll make sure you get to who would be the best help for you.
My guest has been Carrie Weigel. She is co-owner of Sylvan Learning Centers. It's an option for parents and students who want to enhance either their public or private education here in North Dakota. Carrie, thank you so much for joining us today on Main Street.
Thank you, Craig.
Dakota Stage of Bismarck presents Sweet Surrender, a fast-paced 1940s-era farce where two rival Hollywood divas are mistakenly booked into the same hotel suite on the night of a big wartime benefit. With slamming doors, mistaken identities, and over-the-top antics, it's classic screwball comedy you won't want to miss. Running May 8th through the 18th at the Dakota Stage in downtown Bismarck. More information and ticket availability can be found online at dakotastage.org.
This is Dakota Datebook for May 7th. Sykeston, North Dakota, was considered the county seat when Wells County was organized. In November of 1884, Pheasanton received more than 3/5 of the votes in an election to formally decide the county seat. But the matter was not settled, even with a vote. Newspapers reported that Wells County is all torn up over a county seat fight. Sykeston businessmen were not willing to admit defeat. They claimed there were irregularities in the voting. They were countered by Pheasanton businessmen who were eager to make the move. They wasted no time and rounded up several men with teams and wagons heading to Sykeston to claim the safes, records, and the courthouse furniture. The sheriff favored Pheasanton and conveniently took a long vacation as the supporters arrived to claim the courthouse property. The men went to the courthouse. They faced the challenge of moving the large safe. They needed timbers, so they went to the lumberyard. The lumber dealer did not support relocating the county seat and refused to sell the timbers. The Pheasanton crew took them anyway and left their money on the counter. They loaded the safe on timbers across two wagons and filled other wagons with smaller safes, boxes of records, and furniture. The wagons were heavy, and it took all night to get back to Pheasanton. The county auditor was eager to move out of the makeshift storefront in Sykeston and into a real courthouse, but that didn't happen overnight. The county commissioners finally called a special election on this date in 1895 to decide the question of a $12,000 bond issue for construction of a new courthouse and jail in Pheasanton. The bond issue passed, and the commissioners hired an architect and the Pheasanton Construction Company. In December, they purchased 6 coal heating stoves and insured the building for over $10,000. Wells County residents celebrated the opening of the new building on New Year's Eve in 1895. F.B. Gray's Little Brown Orchestra provided the music for the dancers. The crowd enjoyed a dinner at the hotel, then returned to the city hall to finish the night with more dancing. Still in use today, the courthouse was listed on the National Register of Historic Places in 1977. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Dr. Carol Butcher. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
We'd like to thank the North Dakota Council on the Arts for supporting art programming here on Prairie Public.
Thank you. Scott Detrow's live at Vatican City watching the smoke signals indicating whether a new pope has been chosen. And we'll go elsewhere in Europe for the anniversary of Victory Day, when the United Kingdom and its allies accepted Nazi Germany's unconditional surrender, marking the end of World War II. On the next Morning Edition from NPR News.
Starting at 4 a.m. Central, right here on Prairie Public.
And that's it for today's Main Street. We are deeply grateful that you spent time with us, and to all of those who participated in our 2025 Spring Pledge Drive, thank you. Tomorrow on the show, Dr. Jack Russell Weinstein has written a new book, Israel, Palestine, and the Trolley Problem. It's free, and we'll have a discussion with the author. That's tomorrow on Main Street, and we hope you'll join us again.